Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
That stat still echoing in many of your minds. Dub, does that blow your mind that the 50 years the New Orleans Saints have not drafted a quarterback in the first round? Can you think of a wilder, more crazy stat than that for NFL draft-related purposes?
No, I can't. And I saw, I mean, just hearing that stat, 50 years. It's unbelievable, especially when you consider the number of teams that are seemingly drafting a quarterback every 4 years in the first round. To go 50 years, half a century, without drafting a quarterback in the first round, it's really unbelievable.
I mean, I think Peyton Manning is like 43 or 44 years old. I mean, his dad was drafted 7 years before he was even born by the New Orleans Saints. And Peyton Manning's entire life, they haven't drafted anybody in the first round. I mean, it's remarkable. By the way, our draft coverage, we've been talking a lot about the draft so far throughout the program. We'll continue to do so. On Fox Sports Radio, it was brought to you by NetSuite. We did fantastic stuff all throughout the weekend. Props to everybody who worked on the Fox Sports Radio draft coverage. So I teased as we went to break there something that I wanted to hit with you that I don't think got as much attention as it should have. One of the most telling draft picks that occurred this weekend was actually what the Houston Texans did with their first pick in the third round. They drafted Davis Mills out of Stanford. That's the first pick the Texans had because of trades. They didn't have a pick in the first round. They didn't have a pick in a second round. And it's kind of awkward to talk about. But right now, the Houston Texans on their roster basically have Tyrod Taylor and Davis Mills as the potential quarterbacks. There aren't a lot of available quarterbacks out there. The Texans don't have a lot of ammunition to be able to trade. This is a sign, a clear one, that the Texans are not anticipating having Deshaun Watson for the entirety of the 2021 season. Because if they thought there was any way possible that Deshaun Watson was going to play for them, there's no way that they would draft a quarterback with their first pick in the third round. This is a clear sign, clear as day, couldn't be any more transparent, that the Texans are legitimately uncertain about when or if Deshaun Watson will ever return to the NFL. And the cloud of Deshaun Watson kind of held out over the entirety of the NFL draft because it impacted so many different decisions. The Chicago Bears might not have drafted Justin Fields if they had been able to find a way to trade for Deshaun Watson. The San Francisco 49ers probably don't trade up to 3 at all if they can find a way to get Deshaun Watson. The Carolina Panthers don't make the move to bring in Sam Darnold if they could have found a way to trade for Deshaun Watson. So many different teams out there that were in the quarterback marketplace ended up having to make decisions, probably the Rams as well, over this Deshaun Watson mess. And the Texans now are having to try and protect themselves by going out and getting a quarterback in the third round. And this is one of the major issues. This is me putting my lawyer hat on. I feel like the Deshaun Watson story in general has been wildly undercovered given how significant the stakes and dangers are for Deshaun Watson. Because we covered this story a lot with Deshaun Watson before the sexual assault allegations were made by 22 women. Before that, it's basically the Aaron Rodgers story. Now, it's a little bit different because I think Aaron Rodgers wants out of Green Bay partly because of what he saw Tom Brady do in year one with Tampa Bay. And unlike 25-year-old Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers has given the Packers every opportunity to build a team around him and be able to win with him. And then the Packers disrespected him by going and drafting another quarterback in the first round. If that situation had happened in Houston, I'd be like, okay, I understand why Deshaun Watson is furious. But so far, that hadn't happened. The Texans have made the playoffs 6 of the last 10 years. They had won playoff games a couple of years in a row, including coming into 2020. They had had a 24-point lead on the road against the Kansas City Chiefs, and it looked like they were going to eliminate the Chiefs from playoff contention. And then, of course, the Chiefs just put pedal to the metal, took off in a different direction. But a lot of people are apprehensive, I think. I mean, look, this happened in Houston. They fired a guy who writes about the Houston Texans because he went on radio and talked about the Deshaun Watson case in a way that made people uncomfortable, at least his bosses uncomfortable. And so I think in stories like these, there are lots of sports writers and sports media members who just say, oh, you know what? There's nothing good that can come from me talking about a story this serious. It's higher than my pay grade. There's no analysis that I can offer that's particularly apropos or helpful. All I can do is get myself in trouble by talking about the Deshaun Watson case. Because you got 22 different women that have accused him of sexual assault. You have to worry about talking about it in a way that's respectful, but also providing some sort of value to the discussion. And I think a lot of people are just like, you know what? I ain't touching it. And I thought that was primarily talked about in a very slim magnitude during the NFL draft as well. But the Texans are giving you a clear picture into their worldview when they draft Davis Mills. They're letting you know this is Tyrod Taylor's team, and they are getting a young quarterback that they are now going to groom, because I think the Texans are acknowledging effectively that Deshaun Watson may never take another snap for them ever again for the rest of his career. And who knows when Deshaun Watson is going to be taking a snap for anybody for that perspective. But that pick to me told us an absolute mountain about the future of Deshaun Watson in Houston. I think his time is over there. I think he is finished in Houston.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We are joined now by Barrett Salee, covers college football for CBS Sports, also huge Bachelor aficionado, among many other angles. And I've been jealous of him because he's been able to go to a lot of Atlanta Braves games of late, even though the Braves aren't playing very well. I know the Braves are going to 100% capacity on Friday, which is pretty cool. What has the vibe been like in Truist Park there? For purposes of being able to go to a Major League Baseball game, has it felt pretty normal, like from your perspective?
Well, aside from the fact that the Braves are 0-4 in games that I've been to,
yeah, that's good.
It's been really normal. Honestly, you know, you walk in, you know, they have the mask mandate in place. I think mostly for legal purposes. You walk in, take your mask off. Nobody cares. You know, they trust adults to act like adults, and for the most part, people do. You know, they have people spread out in pods, but it's not. You know, you're free to move about however really you want to. So yeah, it's felt normal. In fact, you know, we had 33% for the first homestand and then 50% for the second homestand, and you know, honestly, it felt like there was more of a, you know, more passion, because I think everyone sort of feels like they're never going to take for granted attending a sporting event live again. And
right.
So, you know, there's this level of appreciation that, I mean, I kind of figured it would be like that, but it really manifested itself into really playoff type atmospheres, which was pretty cool.
We're talking to Barrett Salee, CBS Sports. All right, so the draft obviously happened on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I love watching the draft, and I know you're a huge college football fan too. And everybody has to have instantaneous takes on how quarterbacks in particular are going to transition from college football to the NFL. So let's start with the quarterbacks. Now that you know where guys are headed and what their situations are going to be like, who do you like the position of from a quarterback perspective? Not necessarily, I'll get to talent and your overall evaluation, but I think everybody knows it's a total crapshoot as you try to forecast from college to the NFL. But based on teams and based on situations, who do you think is set up the best for success?
Yeah, it's like, it's almost like the divorces, right? Half of the first round marriages between quarterbacks and teams in the divorce, you know,
that's right.
Badly. So, I think Trevor and Urban together, I love the fact that Urban's coaching the NFL. Been really intrigued by the possibility for a while. I know he has as well. I think he was in the mindset when he was coaching at Florida and Ohio State, okay, if the right situation comes along, you're going to have to seriously consider it at the pro level. So Trevor can run. He's much better runner than people realize, and obviously we know about his passing prowess. So I think I'm really intrigued by that. And then I'd still love to know why there was Justin Fields slander, because I don't get it. The kid's awesome. He's a great quarterback. He can run. He can make every throw deep downfield. Natural-born leader, and tough as nails. And for him to go to the Bears, you know, I know they failed with the Trubisky thing and I guess proclaimed Andy Dalton QB1 when they signed him a month or two ago. But I think Justin Fields is going to be an exceptional quarterback for Chicago. And I think because he's sort of charged with, you know, saving a lot of jobs in the front office and the coaching staff, that they're going to let him loose right out of the gate, which I'm so excited to see. And I said this on my SiriusXM show yesterday morning. I think he's going to win a Super Bowl with the Bears.
You think Justin Fields will win a Super Bowl with them? Oh, you just the Chicago Bears fans are already – like they haven't really had a quarterback in about 30 or 40 years that they could really be excited about, and now you just set the expectations insanely high going forward.
Well, yeah, but I'm not, I believe in Justin Fields that much. I really do. And Bears fans hated me when I said Trubisky sucks, and you know they thought I was biased against the Bears and have no issue with them whatsoever. But Justin Fields falling the way he did, you know, it's going to be so much fun to watch him play, grow, and become an NFL quarterback. And look, I am I a little biased toward Justin Fields? I saw him in high school. He lived and lives in the same county that I do in Cobb County. So, you know, I've seen him a lot, but, you know, he's never not been that dude. He's always been just an all out stud in every aspect of his game. So I just can't wait to see it. In fact, a little bit disappointed that he fell past my Falcons, even though I love Kyle Pitts and I love the damage that he can do with that offense. I would have rather planned for the future and have Justin Fields, but yeah, he's going to be so much fun.
We're talking to Barrett Salee, CBS Sports. What about other guys? I mean, Zach Wilson at BYU, Trevor Lawrence with Jacksonville. I know you kind of hinted about that with the Urban Meyer combination. Trey Lance, like the guys that went in the top five, Mac Jones, obviously from Alabama. How would you assess them going forward based on what you thought of them in college and on now their situations, now that you know who they're going to be playing for?
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of Zach Wilson. He's talented, and he'll, you know, I think he's fully capable of being an NFL quarterback. But I thought a lot of his success last year was due to the fact that he had grown adults on the offensive line, like adults that have gone on mission trips and have come back with, like, families. Like they're, yeah, they're literally adults. And I think last year in the COVID year, more than in other years, that was hugely beneficial. It's a big deal, obviously, in normal years, but with what happened last year, an even bigger deal, because you look at what happened when he played teams with decent defensive lines and the pass rush got to him a little bit. He did not play well. So, you know, I'm not the biggest Zach Wilson guy, and I guess all of us are programmed to think the worst of the Jets until they prove us otherwise, which I think is the right way to go about it. Trey Lance, to me, I think he's got the talent, but he's just so raw. I mean, not playing in 18 months is a big deal. Not really having a much of a competition level is a big deal. And I'm not saying he is Mitch Trubisky, but I think from the sense that you're taking a pretty big risk on a guy who really doesn't have that big of a resume, that high in the draft. Like I get why there's love and why there's hope for him. Third overall, a little aggressive to me. And, you know, Mac Jones going to the Patriots, I think just because, you know, Bill Belichick's an evil genius, Mac is probably going to win 7 or 8 Super Bowls just because that's the perfect situation for him and that kid. But, I mean, you can't handpick a better place if you're Mac Jones because you're in a good quarterback competition with Cam and Stidham. You're in a great place with a pedigree for success, you know, and you've proven that you can be a top-tier quarterback already at the toughest place to play college football. So I really like that for Mac. I think he's going to be set up really well there. And look, he might not play this year as much as maybe he wants to, but in the end, I think that's probably a good thing.
Do you buy into the possibility with some guys who went late second, early third in Kyle Trask, Kellen Mond, and Davis Mills? Any of those guys you would buy stock in as potential NFL starters, or anybody else that went outside of the top five that you think, hey, this guy could be a starter in the NFL based on what I saw in college?
Yeah, I think Kyle Trask absolutely can. You know, he was so good last year with an average offensive line, below average running backs. And his wide receiving core was awesome. So that helped him for sure. I'm super interested in what Kellen Mond does with the Vikings, because at A&M, he was just sort of up and down, right? Like he had moments. He looked like he was in control. He was running an offense that I think in the NFL now will help him, because Jimbo's offense is extremely complicated. So I think from that aspect of it, he is set up well. He does not get rattled. And I think actually not being around Jimbo might actually be a good thing, because nothing against Jimbo Fisher. He's a great coach. I just think that, you know, he just kept throwing more and more and more and more at Kellen. And sometimes when he's unsuccessful or struggled, you know, that part of that was the fact that maybe he had the entire playbook, when, you know, the entire playbook for Jimbo is the equivalent of Homer's The Odyssey or an encyclopedia. It's just, I mean, nobody yeah. can know it. So, you know, I'm intrigued to see maybe if he's more relaxed without having, you know, to be not only the man, but a guy who just was being treated and coached as if he was a 10-year NFL veteran while in college.
Yeah, it is pretty fascinating to think about how those guys might do. And I talked about this a little bit earlier at the start of the second hour of the program, just the last segment, about, to me, the Davis Mills pick is so intriguing because of all the mess that's going on with Deshaun Watson. And if you watch the draft on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Deshaun Watson and the legal issues that he's facing sort of loomed over many of the decisions that were being made, right? Because there were a lot of teams that would have maybe made a run, maybe the 49ers, maybe the Panthers, maybe the Broncos, after Deshaun Watson, and tried to bring him in. And instead, obviously, we still have the Aaron Rodgers drama. But instead, you know, you've got that uncertainty. The Texans didn't have a pick in the first and second round. And then, boom, they went and grabbed Davis Mills. And now it's Tyrod Taylor or Davis Mills, who's likely, I think, to be starting for the entire year for the Texans. That's a pretty wild scenario to find yourself in.
It is. And, you know, perfectly timed for Aaron Rodgers. Would never have guessed that he'd demand the spotlight. When he could take
it. Also going to the Kentucky Derby and did a couple of different interviews on the Kentucky Derby as well, trying to dodge the Packer story. But yeah, look, I mean, that was such a calculated attempt to win all of the it was basically a screw you to the Green Bay Packers, because there's no way he could have drawn more attention to this situation than the way that he did it.
Yeah, and nobody's a bigger fan of Aaron Rodgers than Aaron Rodgers. I think that's been made
established for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Davis Mills is interesting. He's a kid from around where I'm from, too. And, you know, I think he was at a high school that didn't really have a ton of competition. Now he goes to Stanford. He kind of gets thrust into action a couple years ago, you know, when Costello got hurt, maybe a little bit premature. Has the COVID-shortened season last year where the Pac-12 was just a giant mess. So, you know, when he's at the NFL level, I feel like he is going to be a massive, massive project, because the situation for him never materialized where he could become, you know, a star and get the kind of grooming and pedigree that a lot of these other guys have already had. Now, he's in a system, obviously, at Stanford that certainly is beneficial to his progress as a quarterback in the National Football League, but I mean, he didn't take a lot of snaps. And it was so disjointed his short career at Stanford as a starting quarterback. So I think he's a good player. Is he going to start right away? If he does, then the Texans are mirroring themselves to a massive, massive rebuild, which is fine because maybe Davis can handle that. But asking him to come in right away and be a competent quarterback or an above average quarterback right out of the gate, I think you might be asking too much. So again, that's not really an indictment of him. I think it's just more the product of the circumstances when he was at Stanford.
Okay, so let's shift from the NFL here to college football. And this story to me is actually not getting enough attention. Not last week, but the week before on a Friday, the College Football Playoff Committee kind of dropped a big news item where they said, hey, by the way, we're talking about expanding the college football playoff. And we're not just talking about expanding the college football playoff to 8. We're talking about 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, like all 63 different possible ways, I think they were discussing, to potentially expand the playoff. So, first question, are you in favor of expanding the playoff? And if so, what should it look like?
No, I'm not in favor of expanding the playoff. I think it's fine at 4. I'd actually be fine going back to the BCS. First things first, I would love to know what option 60 through 63 are.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, 63 is a lot.
Deep into the weeds. You're digging deep for those. No, I'm fine with the way it is. Look, I think the biggest problem that I have with any playoff expansion is that it would have to come with automatic bids for conference champions. A lot of these conferences are determined by geography or academic affiliation from 70 years ago. None of them are created equally. So if you win your geographically determined division, does that make you elite in a sport that has 130 teams? No, there's just no way it does. So that's my biggest thing. If you expand it, you're focusing on access, not excellence, because every single year right now in college football is determined by the landscape of each individual year, which I think in college football really has to be the case because, again, none of these teams are created equal. The schedules aren't equal. There's no way to break it down. And personally, I would like to do away with divisions and leagues in the pros as well and just take whatever teams present themselves as the best teams on any given year. Obviously, it's not going to happen, and certainly it's part of it's because it's more centralized. But, no, I do not want expansion at all. And really, I mean, honestly, Clay, if we're going to go down that road, we might, I mean, we'll see. But if we're going to go down that road, or just if we're going to stay in the same format, why don't we just eliminate divisions in conferences?
I've argued that for a long time. I don't think divisions make any sense at all.
It's stupid. And because, like, honestly, look, if you do that, then right now with the system, it becomes more legitimate, right? If you expand it, which I don't think we should do, but if you do expand it, automatic bids for conference champions would be a little bit more tolerable because you really would have to be a good team. So, I mean, I think above all else, the sport would be way better off without divisions across the board. Then at that point, I think the championship weekend would be an expanded playoff. Like there you would have it right then and there. And if you wanted to expand it anyway, fine. But it would make Championship Saturday so much more interesting and essentially make that as a playoff.
Has there ever been a bigger disconnect between the people, by and large, who cover college football and the people who are fans of college football? And I'm going to use as an example. I saw you retweet Stuart Mandel, who writes at The Athletic, and Stuart Mandel said, hey, you shouldn't be able to go to an SEC football game unless you've gotten the vaccine. That's what he tweeted as an idea. You may have paid more attention to it. I haven't seen very many colleges themselves say that they're going to condition student enrollment on getting the vaccine, much less trying. I've been to every SEC football stadium. The idea that you're going to in some way have a gate agent checking somebody to see whether or not they've had a vaccine. If they have 100,000 seat stadiums, it's hard to get in and out of these stadiums oftentimes anyway. You're talking about a bottleneck, which would be a bottleneck to stop all bottlenecks in terms of getting in. But I also think that there's almost no one who is a fan of the Southeastern Conference that would agree with the idea that you shouldn't be able to go to a college football game unless you've been vaccinated for COVID. And yet I think probably a lot of people who are in the media industry that cover our sport, and I say our sport because I spent a lot of time covering college football and still kind of do, that disconnect is pretty massive, right? And I don't know that there's a bigger disconnect anywhere than the difference the way people think who cover college football for a living versus the fans of college football.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that's not the case in our industry. I have begun to think, I think it has become more of a probability than a possibility since this whole thing started over a year ago. This disconnect has gotten pretty significant because I can't imagine. I think there are a few schools from academic standpoint that have required a vaccination. I'd love to see how that holds up in court because I don't think it will. You're a lawyer, I'm not. But I
think it's more challenging, too, for state institutions. And again, every state is going to have a different rule. And 13 of the 14 schools that are in the Southeastern Conference are state institutions. And I'll just use as an example the state of Texas, which has a Vanderbilt law grad in Greg Abbott as its as its head of the governor. Same thing, Ron DeSantis is a Harvard law grad, and he's the governor of Florida. And both of those guys have said specifically that no businesses in their states are going to be able to condition entry on whether you get a vaccine or not. Right? They've just specifically said that. So there's no chance that the University of Florida, for instance, or Texas A&M in the SEC, for example, are going to be able to legally make that demand because that goes directly in contravention of state law and of the mandates that have been put out by the governor.
Correct. And I think the obvious rebuttal for people that maybe are on the side of requiring vaccinations is that, well, you have to have a vaccination to go to school or whatever. Well, yeah, that has been approved by the FDA after years and years and years of study. The COVID vaccine is not officially approved. It was declared for emergency use.
Also, so, measles impacts children in a massive way. COVID has almost no impact on. I mean, kids are under more danger. The analogy I would use is kids are under more danger from the seasonal flu. And there is, to my knowledge, no state that mandates that kids get the flu vaccine, right? Every single year we have a different flu shot. And to my knowledge, I can't remember any state ever requiring that. Again, I think there's an analogy under risk factors that becomes paramount here. And kids are not under risk. Furthermore, right now, the vaccine is not eligible for anybody under the age of 16 anyway. So my point on this would be,
what are you supposed to do?
Yeah. If you're conditioning to enter, if you're conditioning the vaccine to go into a stadium, you're automatically going to have to exempt all kids, which, as you know, is a substantial number of people that go. There's very much of a family atmosphere at college football games, particularly in the Southeast. Grandpa, grandma, dad, mom, and the kids all go. Like, it's kind of crazy to not even think through the idea. And this is kind of what Twitter, I think, often creates, is people throw out ideas without actually working through why the idea is on its face impossible and often frequently stupid.
Well, and here's the thing with the vaccine, too. If you get it, you've protected yourself.
Yes.
You've protected yourself in a way that if you get the first shot, it's 80%. If you get the second shot, it's 90%. And when the typical flu vaccine, depending on the year, because they have to protect, try to create it for all these different strains, is, 47 to 55% effective, whatever.
So right.
If those numbers are accurate, then the COVID vaccine is more more powerful and protects you better than a lot of other vaccines. So if you're going to be that protected, if you've taken the vaccine – and there are people there that haven't taken the vaccine, generally speaking, they're probably not going to get sick or very sick at all, if they get sick at all, right? So
if you're afraid, that's my argument for a long time.
Go.
If you're afraid,
don't go.
The vaccine so that you don't have to worry about anyone else,
and then
right?
You can go if you want to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, through all this, Clay, the idea that adults can make adult decisions and being responsible people is still on the table and not having everything handed to you, it feels like personal responsibility is an afterthought now. And, I mean, like, look, if I'm sick or if I have a cold or I feel like I might be a threat to somebody else for whatever reason, whether it's COVID or in other instances. I'm not going to go to the game. I cannot go. And if you're concerned about getting COVID, don't go. Requiring a vaccine for people to live their life like a normal adult is just crazy to me. Like, I can't even fathom how, on so many levels, that angers me, makes me sad, and makes me concerned for a lot of different reasons. It's bizarre to me. There's no way they can do that.
I don't even, even without having to get into all that, and I agree with a lot of what you said, I just don't know how you implement the policy. I've been to every SEC football stadium. 100,000 people going through the gates backs up substantially, right? And suddenly you're going to have who? Like a ticket taker who's checking to see whether or not someone has got a vaccine, a picture of their vaccine card? I don't even know what the standard would be by which it could occur. It's impossible, and it's just totally illogical to me.
And think about this from a logistical standpoint, just from an operational standpoint for a stadium. Clay, I think you've been at the same three games that have had the President of the United States attend.
Oh, it's impossible to get in. Yes.
The Secret Service trying to get into those stadiums was always crazy. And yes, I would say a vaccine passport would be even more of a bottleneck. So, there's from a logistical and operational standpoint, it'd be almost impossible.
Absolutely insane. Barrett Salee, I appreciate the time. Good luck, by the way, with your kids' Little League seasons. I know that you are into the playoffs coaching. I'm coaching Little League, too. I've got a game later tonight. Hopefully the weather will allow it. But I know how wild that time of year can be, and I'm still jealous that you get to go to as many Braves games as you have, even if they've lost all of them. We'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, you know what? I got my season tickets. Anytime you want to come, just let me know, and I'll send them your way.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week. Explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Gotta say this. We're just talking with Barrett Salee about this idea of requiring the vaccine in order to enter a college football stadium. And I know the Buffalo Bills, I think it was, said that you're going to have the vaccine to be able to go watch games in Orchard Park. This is crazy to me. And I'm not even getting into what you or your family may decide to do as it pertains to vaccines from COVID, right? You make your own choice. Certainly, I've encouraged people who are elderly and are at incredibly elevated risk of danger. My own family, go get the vaccine. If you're over the age of 70, for sure. If you're retirement age, all of those things. But if you're under the age of 50, by and large, you are under more danger of things that most people deal. Like, you're basically as likely to be murdered as you are to die of COVID. And if you're under the age of like 18, you're more likely to die of the seasonal flu than you are of COVID. And so whatever choice you may make, I think those are important details. And I've said this before, but I'll say it again. If 50,000 people under the age of 50 get COVID, one person will die. That's if all 50,000 get it. This is a very age stratified illness. If you are elderly, COVID is very dangerous to you. If you are young and or somewhat healthy, you're not really under that much danger, okay? But in terms of the implementation of an idea that you should have to have a vaccine in order to enter a stadium, this is a non-starter. The idea that a gate agent is going to be in charge, and I mean like the gate, I don't mean like an airplane gate agent. I mean somebody who's standing checking tickets is going to also be checking to see if you got a vaccine. I mean, the people who check tickets are not doctors. They aren't exactly the highest level of security even, and you're going to tell me that they're going to try to be checking in stadiums that might be seating 100,000 people to see whether or not people have vaccines? Dub, you went to Auburn. Can you imagine when you try to enter Jordan-Hare Stadium, if there were people checking for vaccines, how long it would take to get in, leaving aside everything else other than just the sheer mechanics of checking IDs, it would be an absolute disaster.
Oh, disaster is the appropriate word. It's disastrous enough.
Is this one of the dumbest ideas that you've ever heard?
I don't even understand how it's possible. Like, it doesn't make even any sense at all, the idea that, like, you're right, these people checking tickets are also going to be in charge of making sure and verifying people that they got COVID vaccines. It doesn't make any sense.
I don't even know how it's possible, right? I mean, are you going to demand that people bring COVID vaccination cards, leaving aside that these are actually, like, many states in the SEC in particular, where this started was a college football writer said, oh, you should demand that every college football fan get the vaccine. But leaving aside that is a violation of state law, that governors like Ron DeSantis of Florida and Greg Abbott of Texas have already said, hey, businesses can't require vaccines in order to allow you to enter. The idea that you could even implement a system like this is so laughably absurd, I question whether anybody has ever tried to enter a big college football stadium as a regular fan who could even have that opinion. Like, I have done it every SEC football stadium I've gotten in. Right before kickoff, it's an absolute cluster to get in a stadium. And that's just checking for tickets. Can you imagine if a gate agent checking tickets for a football stadium was also being demanded that they check and see whether or not there's a COVID vaccination? You would never get in. It's absolutely impossible, to say nothing of the fact that it might also be illegal. All right, when we come back, we are going to dive into the Aaron Rodgers drama off the top of the third hour of the program, and then we are scheduled to be joined by Dr. David Chow. A lot of different NFL draft-related medical issues, as well as Tiger Woods, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Fernando Tatis Jr., a lot of different stories to dissect and dive into with Dr. David Chow. That will be next. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us here on Fox Sports Radio.